Hello and welcome La Liga fans to the latest edition of Eye on La Liga, Market English's official podcast. And once again we find ourselves in that tricky situation of the suspensions and all the refereeing controversies coming back. And yet there's a funny little voice that we're hearing on one end of the receiver. That's because it's Mark Mayo and myself joining you as the host today for Eye on La Liga. Ollie Wilson, amazingly, has lost his voice, so sadly he's gone the way of quite a few of the conspiracy theories and what have you for how La Liga is being officiated these days, but that won't stop us from having the fun. Now, what have we got to talk about this week? Obviously, there's the Real Madrid win over Real Betis to chew over, Barcelona lost 2-1 to Deportivo La Coruña, and then there's Sevilla and their up-and-coming Champions League game. To do that with me, joining me is Ewan McTeer, author of Ibar the Brave and Market English journalist. How are we doing, Ewan?
Yeah, good. I've still got my voice. I've been keeping all my refereeing rants to typing on keyboard, so, you know, I'm good to talk for the next half an hour or so.
Absolutely. And Aldo Sanati, my fellow Market English journalist, is with us as well. How are we doing, Aldo?
Hey, Mark. Yeah, it seems like it's been a while.
Yeah, well, there's plenty to catch up on, at the very least. And we'll start at the Estadio Santiago Bernabeu, where Real Madrid fell one goal down, just as we've seen plenty of times this season. And I was thinking maybe I can just copy and paste the podcast from previous weeks, because it's the same old routine that we're finding once a month to get time and time again, with Sergio Ramos popping up with that late header to secure the 3 points in La Liga. Puts Real Madrid top of La Liga, but we'll get more onto that later. It was kind of a weird game to go about. As much as we're saying it's kind of usual, but it still doesn't feel right or normal to be watching a minnow in effects like Real Betis go to the Bernabeu and get that opening goal, have a massive refereeing decision go against them as well, however normal that may feel for some fans. And then it's the kind of struggle for Real to get in. It certainly wasn't that imperious kind of stroll in the park that we've seen in recent years. And in the end, it was down to two headers and the late goal that we've just mentioned. The first thing that I was planning on raising with you guys is that teams like Real Betis are going to the Bernabeu now. And are they working out Real Madrid far too easily in terms of tactics and their approach to the game? Are they really setting their stall up far too successfully for what we're used to?
Yeah, it seems it's nothing unusual really to see Real Madrid dropping points. I mean, we've seen this in previous seasons, but what's unusual is sort of what you touched upon there, is the fact that it's happening now at the Bernabeu. I mean, before it used to, you could almost, you know, tick the 3 points into the Real Madrid column whenever they had a home game, and it was the same for Barcelona. But now we've seen teams like Las Palmas and now Real Betis give them a right go at home in front of their own fans, and they've dropped points as well against Villarreal there, against Eibar. The Bernabeu isn't the fortress that it once used to be. Even though Real Madrid are, you know, have been playing some of their best football this season, so I think part of it is maybe what you mentioned of being able to work out tactically what they're up to. But another part of it is once you see one team get a result at the Bernabeu, I think some other teams are no longer that fear factor of going away to Real Madrid, and teams like Real Betis are going to set up and give it a go.
I think that's exactly right. What Ewan's mentioned. I think to go even a little bit further, I think that all of La Liga, just outside of the big three, has really improved just in general in terms of their play, in terms of the amount of the players that they're getting on their teams. And what I see is a lot of different teams that are having they have a lot more of an identity, and so they're coming into the Bernabeu with a lot of different ideas and a lot of things that they want to try, and they're just being a lot more convincing in how they're doing it. And I think that a lot of it is because these lower teams that you've normally would just assume that Real could just defeat quite easily, they're being very well coached. They have a lot of different plans that they're bringing out, whether it's being very compact or playing on the counter or even having a bit more of possession, depending on the team. They're just able to come into the Bernabeu and put in really impressive performances. And even in the cases where Real is able to steal all 3 points, like they did Sunday night against Betis, you're seeing teams that are playing them without fear, like Ewan mentioned.
So let's jump into that kind of massive topic from the off then. Has the fear gone from the lower teams when they go to the Clásico pair? Are they now able to have this confidence based on their players, or do you think it's down to the coaches? Because there's a lot of young Spanish coaches in charge of teams like Real Betis, Espanyol at the moment that are doing quite well. Or is it just a case that the top two teams have dropped off slightly?
Yeah, it might be a little bit of both. I mean, we have seen some inconsistencies from Real Madrid and Barcelona this season, but part of it might be to do with this new TV deal where, you know, the promise was that the wealth would be spread a little bit more. And I think we all expected to see a bit more competitiveness in La Liga, but I personally didn't expect to see it so soon. And that might be part of it. I mean, I think some of the smaller teams have had bigger budgets. You know, there's even Atletico, for example, are all of a sudden, you know, having far more resources than they could ever have dreamt of. And this is really helping the smaller teams in La Liga to put together squads, to buy players from, you know, other leagues and attract really, you know, exciting players. You just look at Sevilla, for example, and the squad they have, some of those players in recent seasons, they would never have thought of going to Sevilla, and Sevilla wouldn't have had the resources to get them. So I think that's been a really important thing, and that's it only really just getting started. So if we see in future seasons that this new television deal spreads the wealth even more, we really could see Sevilla and Atletico challenging for La Liga more regularly.
So Aldo, back on Real Madrid, we're looking at a performance again that was kind of based on getting it out wide, getting balls into the box and working out Ronaldo, Ramos, so obviously the two best players in the team for that. Morata also can get on a header, as we've seen a number of times this season. Are we witnessing the tactical peak of Zidane now? Is it going to get any more complex here, or is this kind of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think Zidane, tactically, he's a coach that has been criticized a lot. I think one of the things that has got him the Champions League in last season, and he keeps it very simple tactically. And like you mentioned, we're seeing a lot of crosses. I mean, he started both Isco and James against Betis on Sunday night, and both of those players are obviously very good on the ball, very good playmakers, and they've, you know, played in sort of wider positions than they normally do. Both of them obviously are normally number 10s. But, you know, from these wide positions, not only did you have Carvajal and Marcelo putting in crosses, but you also had Isco and James Rodriguez putting in these crosses. So I think that it was definitely a very conscious approach. It was definitely part of Zidane's game plan. And I think the biggest reason for it is just to get the most out of Cristiano. I mean, Barcelona always talks about what they do to get the most out of Messi. Well, you know, Real's doing the same with Cristiano. And Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, he's evolved as a player. I think a lot of people haven't really been able to decipher how he's changed. But I think what Zidane wants to do is he wants to get him from, you know, CR7 to CR9, if you will, and get him into scoring positions and getting him in the box as much as possible, because he's a great header of the ball. His movement is very good. So I think that most of all was what Zidane wanted to do against Betis with those crosses, at least.
Absolutely. I like the idea of CR9 quite a bit. I don't think that Karim Benzema is going to be handing over his shirt too soon. Yeah, I think he's number nine anyway. We also had today, interestingly, came out, Javier Tebas, the La Liga president, came out with his idea that the officiating in La Liga has been sort of blown out of all proportion, really, that there aren't actually any problems with it, or certainly not any unusual problems for comparisons to the rest of the league. You kind of looked at these quotes first earlier, Mark, in English, and so soon after the Keylor Navas incident, in which it was, I think it's a pretty clear red card, whether it's a penalty or not, I don't think it was quite outside the inside the area. Is firstly, what was your take on the refereeing performances over the weekend? Did we see a kind of more normal, less controversial sort of stance, as it were? And also, looking at Keylor Navas as well, did it kind of show that his mental ability had kind of gone?
Yeah, I found the Tebas quotes really interesting because, for a change, I found myself agreeing with him, which doesn't really happen that often. But I thought it was quite refreshing that he sort of was trying to, ask everybody to calm down a little bit with the refereeing controversies. There was definitely a problem. I think the standard of officiating this season has been really poor throughout. But that's the point, it's been poor throughout. I don't think it's benefited any one team more than any other team. And, you know, every week there's one team seems to be getting preferential treatment, but then the next week it's the other team, and it just keeps switching around. So I think if we wait till the end of the season before we decide which team is getting preferential treatment, then nobody really should benefit from this poor officiating. It's obviously a problem, and one of Tebas's points was to make... again, he was sort of insisting that we need video refereeing, which is a whole other topic. But yeah, the standard has to improve. But I don't think there's necessarily a bias for Real Madrid in that particular instance with the Keylor Navas one. Of course, that looked like a red card. I think he was trying to play the ball, but with the new rules, and I mean that only really takes effect in the penalty area. I think so. It should have been a red card for Keylor Navas. But then, of course, you know, if he'd been sent off, then he might not have been able to make that fumble for the goal.
Yes, well, that fumble for the goal was kind of redeemed in the last minute, shall we say, with a wonderful diving stop to deny Antonio Sanabria. We'll be back in just five minutes, not even that, about 5 seconds we usually do these musical intervals for. And when we are back, we'll be discussing Barcelona falling down 2-1 at Estadio Olímpico. Welcome back to Marker's Eye on La Liga, and we have Aldo and Ewan here with myself, Mark Mayer, to discuss the big stories of La Liga from the weekend, and where else could we really go to next but the fact that Barcelona managed to fall at Deportivo La Coruña, 3 points dropped, and again it's a game of set pieces and headers that we're talking about in terms of how Pepe Mel's side claim the points. Hossolu turning up, he only scores against the good teams, doesn't he, Hossolu? He certainly didn't do that at Stoke, but he does it now for Deportivo. He got the first goal, and then just after Luis Suarez managed to equalise after the break, Alex Bergantinos emerged from the shadows with 10 minutes to go to win the game. It's an interesting one to analyse this, isn't it? Because we had a lot of changes. There was Neymar and Rafinha out for Barcelona, and Luis Enrique kind of had to muddle through. I was quite pleased, but from a sort of tactical interest point of view, that he stuck with the 3-4-3 and put, you know, Jordi Alba at centre-back, Denis Suarez at right wing. It kind of muddled through, and I mean, sadly from my point of view, because I wanted to see something like that work, it didn't work, did it? And Aldo, is this kind of the sign that 3-4-3 isn't really a long-term solution, certainly after Luis Enrique's gone?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on... The big question is, why did Luis Enrique switch to the 3-4-3 in the first place? I mean, a lot of reason is because of the... There's no right back that is really up to par, in my opinion. Obviously, Sergio Roberto's filled in quite well, but he's more comfortable in midfield. Aleix Vidal with a long-term injury. So, I mean, if you look at it just from the right-back perspective, you know, this isn't a long-term solution just because almost certainly Barcelona is going to sign a right-back over the summer, and you won't have as much of a need for the 3-4-3 if you have a starting right-back. But, you know, at the same time, I think looking a bit more deeply... one of the reasons they switched to this formation is to solve the midfield. You know, all season we've seen Barcelona struggle to control games, to control possession, and to really take the initiative sometimes. And that midfield positioning really improved, I think, since switching to this 3-4-3. And the, you know, a lot of it is with Neymar, like you mentioned, with Umtiti in the back, two key players that weren't available against. Against Deportivo, but you know, in both of these cases, I think that the possession game has really improved when in this formation. So, in that sense, you could see it coming back. And I mean, I'm sure someone like Sampaoli would be more than happy to play 3-4-3, whereas maybe some of the other front runners for the Barcelona coaching position, like, you know, Valverde or Unzue, if he's promoted, I think they could maybe be less likely than someone like Sampaoli to play that 3-4-3.
Ewan, do you think that Barcelona's consideration for bringing in a new coach will be, we want someone who's going to go back to 4-3-3. We want someone who's going to have Iniesta and some kind of playmaker operating with Busquets. We want Messi, Neymar, Suarez up front. Is that going to influence their decision on who is the successor for the dugout?
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the most interesting debates they'll have in the boardroom, because I'm pretty sure there'll be some who want to have Messi, Suarez, Neymar starting as the front three in every match in their, you know, front three positions. But I think there might also be some voices in that room that'll demand a more flexible coach, because the way Luis Enrique was able to turn this tie against PSG around was by switching things up. And we've seen 4-3-3 work so well, it brought them a treble. And then we've seen, the 4-3-3 work so well with the treble, and then we've seen the 3-4-3 bring about one of the greatest comebacks ever. So, and Luis Enrique hadn't really been known for being a particularly flexible coach. So if they can bring someone like Sampaoli in, who can try different formations for different opposition, I think there will be some people hoping for that. But at the same time, it looks good when you've got Messi, Suarez and Neymar up front, banging in the goals and, playing really attacking football. So, it's going to be interesting to see which side of that debate wins out.
I just get a big feeling at the moment that we're a few minutes into the conversation about Barcelona, and there were a few English-speaking Deportivo La Coruña fans who are throwing their handsets and their laptops at the window because they know that we've talked all about the 2-1 and we haven't spoken about how good Pepe Mel's Deportivo set up. And I wanted to shine some sort of light on it, because he's come in, his former West Brom boss, so a lot of English-speaking fans will know Pepe Mel as the guy who kind of came in at West Brom and really didn't do very much at all. They didn't go down, but that was kind of it. And a lot of people say that's kind of how Pepe Mel does things, they just don't go down. They've 1-2 drawn to in their last four La Liga games under him. What exactly was it? I'll open the floor up on this one. What exactly was it that Deportivo did right against Barcelona that made them win the game?
I think some of it is just mentally. I mean, it's always very hard to pinpoint exactly, you know, where the mentality is. But, this was obviously the type of, partido trampa, they say in Spain, like a game where you know that they're going to trip up for Barca, where they're obviously coming off this incredible comeback. And, you know, Pepe Mel has really given his team an emotional boost. And I don't think he's really changed that much tactically. I mean, maybe you and Ewan can jump in, but I think it's fairly similar to what was being done beforehand. And I think it's just a lot of it is emotionally, mentally, they have a new coach, which is always enough to sort of bring a more immediate results. Maybe some players who weren't featuring as much can impress immediately. But I think a lot of it is just that they know that Pepe Mel is good at man-managing his squad and his fame, at least, of helping teams stay up is exactly what Deport needed. I mean, they were always hovering above that relegation zone, but the quality has always been there. I mean, they have talented players. Florin Andones, he's a talented striker. They have a pretty solid back line with Sidney, Bergantinos, these sort of guys. I mean, they have a decent squad, and they've definitely should be a little bit further up. And I think Pepe Mel was sort of the right time and the right sort of energy that the team needed at that ideal moment in the season.
Yeah, I think that's dead right. I don't think he's changed very much at all tactically. And I think the Barcelona one was interesting because it was the best performance I think I've seen. I've seen all of the Deportivo games since he came in. And against Atletico, they weren't actually all that great. And they only really got their goal from a goalkeeping error from Oblak. And against Gijón, they were very lucky to win that game. They probably should have lost. They were outplayed. But I think, as you say, he just has that belief that, you know, we can be playing poorly, but we can still get a result. And it maybe keeps the players going a little bit more. And you might not see the Deportivo heads drop as quickly when they go behind as it maybe was under Garitano.
Yes, and whatever Deportivo fans are angry at their side being rushed aside in the post-match analysis, they'll know surely that Falcao FA in the last minute rushed through 2-1-1, and really the way that it could have been so much easier, a nice 3-1 victory, but he managed to, despite having a colleague right alongside him, drill it straight at Marc-Andre Ter Stegen. So it always goes to show that sometimes the pressure does get to these players, even when it seems like they're on the verge of 3 points. And we will take another short break now. We'll be back in just a few moments to talk about Sevilla, the Champions League, and what's next for La Liga. Welcome back to Marcus Eye on La Liga. We'll have our final section of the show now, where we'll cover the other big stories of the La Liga weekend and look forward to quite an important weekend in Europe as well, and the fixtures that will present to us next weekend as well. I'm going to start that again because that was shit. Sorry. I said next weekend for the Champions League, so I've got to start that. Mm-hmm. Hello and welcome back to Marcus Eye on La Liga. We'll dedicate the final part of the show to just covering a few of the other major La Liga stories of the weekend and look forward to some quite important Champions League fixtures in midweek as well. Sevilla, of course, are playing on Wednesday night against Leicester City with a 2-1 lead from their first leg in the last 16. That has banana skin written all over it for Sevilla, especially after the first leg. And their weekend performance against Leganés was pretty much the worst sort of setup that you could have had. There's no sense of fighting back after a loss, perhaps, or the sense of form that a win would deliver. Instead, they drew 1-1 at the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan. Really not a very good game, was it, Aldo?
No, I mean, the thing with Sevilla is they have a small squad, and they definitely look like they're dropping in form these last couple of weeks, and it's coming at a key time. They're not looking as comfortable, and you know, in a lot of ways, I'm a little bit reminded of Marcelo Bielsa. You know, the guy, the idealistic coach that Sampaoli looks up to and is you know, modeled his career off of, if you will. You know, they look tired, and they look like, you know, the rest of their squad is unable to come into these La Liga games and drill out the results. And, you know, I think that playing without Nasri was important. Kranjevitor's season, just in general, has just been so, so disappointing. And, yeah, I think a lot of it is this drop in form. And, you know, Wednesday night, looking ahead to their Champions League tie, you know, Leicester do have a shot. And I think the biggest reason is, you know, Sevilla have already gotten everybody in that follows Spanish football. Everyone loves to watch them play, and you know, I think they've already won us over in terms of the neutral fans, but in terms of results, I mean, you know, this is a business, and you know, looking past the how well they play, you know, this is a chance that Leicester can take, because they do have this fatigue starting to set in. You know,
yeah, you've mentioned before on the show about how Real Madrid, with their kind of mini preseason that they had in January, kind of stunted their post sort of winter break form. Are we now seeing the same with Sevilla, in that effectively, because they don't have the biggest of squads, as you said, and it just sort of seems like Steven and Zonzi is holding that team together with sellotape for the centre of the park. Are they sort of just running themselves into the ground a little bit too early?
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned, I think Bielsa used to say, you know, the players, they're not robots. If they were robots, you know, I'd win all the time. But it does definitely get the sense that their fitness is dropping. And, you know, and Zonzi in midfield, like you mentioned, has been very important. And because Kranjevitor hasn't been able to slot in, and even just the rest of their squad has not been able to help out in terms of preventing these drops in fitness from being so noticeable. So I definitely do think that that's playing a part, and you've seen it, especially now in February. I mean, obviously they're a team that press a lot. They're playing with a back three, so they definitely need all these players to be as intense as possible. And it is a very demanding coach. You know, it's someone who the demands that are placed on the players is not the same as at other clubs, and so you're definitely starting to see that. So yeah, I would definitely compare it to other teams where they've had to, you know, you can see that there's, you know, in terms of this season, where they're at right now is one of the lowest points.
Absolutely, and I would wager myself. I know Ollie said the first leg would kill this tie off completely, but still very much alive, and it shows how quickly football can change, because it feels like the worst time for the season in both from Sevilla's perspective, the worst part of the season, because Leicester have just picked up a little bit more. Sevilla on their way down, there's no doubt about that. Whether they can drag themselves back up at the King Power will remain to be seen. And the other Champions League title, it should really be done and dusted, shouldn't it, Ewan, between Atletico and Bayer Leverkusen. Four away goals in the bag, Bayer Leverkusen in bits domestically. Is this going to be a stroll in the park, isn't it?
Yeah, this time last week I would probably have said so, but then after watching, there was a little game at the Camp Nou last week that hasn't received much attention that might have changed some of those views. So I'm pretty sure Diego Simeone will have sat his players down and told them, you know, we've got a two-goal lead, but, you know, nothing is secure. And, yeah, they've got to really go for this one, kill it off. Leverkusen, again, they've got a new coach as well, just like Leicester, and it remains to be seen just how much of an effect that will have on their team. I think a lot of the Leverkusen players will know that this tie is almost gone, but they'll want to impress their new coach and try and get some minutes as the season comes to a close. So Atletico have to be wary of that. If they concede one early, then yeah, this game could open up. But they've been in really good form in recent weeks, especially since that game in Germany. So I think, yeah, this one seems a lot more clear-cut than the Sevilla-Leicester one.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got the big tie of Sunday afternoon to look forward to in Atletico Madrid hosting Sevilla. It's kind of hard to predict how that one might fall at the moment, obviously, because the two teams play in midweek. But where is this game going to be won and lost, effectively? Are we looking at Atletico trying to leave it late and getting the odd goal? They've kind of slipped back into that routine again. Or are Sevilla going to be able to rally themselves for two massive games in a week and then go to the colder one?
Yeah, this will be interesting because so far this season, Atletico have really struggled against the big teams. I think they have the worst record out of the sort of mini league of the top six teams. But part of the reason for that is that they've been away from home for a lot of these games. And we saw when Barcelona came to the Calderon a couple of weeks ago that Atletico really did play quite well. They were sort of unlucky to lose that game. And I think if they play just as well against this Sevilla team, then that should be enough to overcome them, especially if they, you know, go all the way in the Champions League. If they happen to lose, you know, they're going to lose some momentum. But then, of course, if they see off Leicester, then they could come into this one renewed, rejuvenated, and Atletico have to watch out. So this is, yeah, like you say, this is a really tricky one to call. But yeah, Atletico at home have started to play really well, even in that Barcelona defeat. So yeah, we'll see how they go.
Yes, and of course on the Saturday afternoon there will be Athletic Club Bilbao hosting Real Madrid. I'm so annoyed because I had such a good stat for this game. And when I found out this stat, no one cared because obviously it was ages ago. But Athletic Club hadn't had an away game in Europa League or La Liga that had been won by the away side. So either at San Mames or when Athletic Club were playing away, the away side hadn't won since September 21st. And then the week before this stat might become relevant, they go and win away to Real Sociedad. So with that in mind, are we now looking at...
In the Basque Derby, nonetheless, yeah.
Exactly, against a very decent Real Sociedad team. So is this actually quite a hard one to predict, Athletic Real Madrid? Usually we would look at it and think, oh, well, you'd expect a draw, maybe, something quite simple. But Aldo, is this a game that Athletic Club are actually now looking at winning?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Athletic is obviously, they're fighting for European spots, and that win against Real Sociedad was really quite impressive. Iñaki Williams put in a man of the match performance, and, you know, he looked quite comfortable in that sort of left wing central striker position. And I think that they do have a pretty good chance of upsetting Real at the San Mamés just because of the way that they're pressing. Beñat looked quite comfortable in midfield as well. And they are sort of building momentum a little bit as they're putting pressure on Real Sociedad and Villarreal for those final Europa League spots. So I think that it does depend a little bit, obviously, on which Madrid shows up. But there is always that chance. But, you know, then again, Real Madrid, as we know, just out of who they are, they can show up. And even at a historic stadium like the new San Mamés, they can always just not be at their best and still take all 3 points. So that should be a really close game and one to definitely keep an eye on.
Absolutely. And then we have Barcelona, Valencia. We'll finish off the La Liga weekend action on March 19th, Sunday evening, that is. It will kick off in Gran Canaria as Las Palmas host Villarreal in the Battle of the Yellow Shirts. Then on Saturday, we have Alaves, Real Sociedad, and Real Betis, Osasuna. Sunday, we'll see Leganes play Malaga. And Sporting Gijón play Granada, of course, in a fantastic relegation battle. Of course, both of those teams are very much likely to go down at the moment. So a draw will be a terrible result there for the two teams playing. Deportivo La Coruña will play Celta Vigo as well on the Sunday afternoon. But I want to just finish on a little bit of attention on what I consider to be the dark horse game of the weekend, and that is Eibar versus Espanyol on noon on Saturday, 1 o'clock Spanish time. And it's 8th versus 9th, and two teams that really have the potential to entertain. Espanyol had a very entertaining 4-3 win over Las Palmas last weekend. Are these two teams going to come out all guns blazing and deliver something that's really worth tuning in for, or is this going to be kind of a more turgid affair, do we reckon?
Yeah, this was a lot of fun when they met earlier in the season. Eibar were 3-0 up at half-time. They had a fantastic first half, and at half-time you were thinking that Kike Sanchez-Flores was maybe on his way out. And then Espanyol came back, they scored 3 goals in the second half and went on an incredible run of not conceding, and that lasted for a couple of months, I think, until they played Barcelona. So they got a 3-3 draw in that game, and ever since, Espanyol have really just been, you know, on the up, and they've caught up with Eibar. They're, yeah, as you mentioned, 8th and 9th in the league. This is a potential battle for that final Europa League spot if 7th place does become one. So yeah, I think this, like you say, this is probably one that could be a lot more fun than it maybe seems on paper. And yeah, I think we can expect both teams to attack in this one, because Eibar at home, they've always really gone for it, and it's usually worked, but you know, sometimes it's kind of whenever they haven't played well, it's still been a very lively, entertaining game. And Espanyol, in the last few weeks, they've sort of ditched their defensive-minded approach a little bit and gone a little bit more all-out. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this one.
Definitely. And memories of Felipe Caicedo's red card in the 84th minute of the 3-3 draw earlier in the season still fresh in Kike Sanchez-Flores' mind, no doubt. Guys, I'm going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back potentially in midweek if there's something really interesting happens that will draw us to a nice little extra time verdict for the midweek games. But otherwise, we'll be back next Monday or Tuesday, as per usual, to chew over the main La Liga action of the weekend. In the meantime, you can, of course, catch all of our best writings, all of our best galleries and all kinds of bits on the Marca English website. That's marca.com/EN on Twitter and Facebook as well. No doubt you know exactly how to find us by now. And that's all that's left me is to thank you for watching, and we will be back next week. Goodbye.